I'm Teresa Gilner, and I'm a doctoral student at the University of Oregon studying biological anthropology.
What does a biological anthropologist do generally? What do you aspire to when you take that degree plan?
Well, there are a lot of different pathways you can take with a biological anthropology degree. My personal interest is in human health. And originally, I've always had an interest in medicine, and I was thinking med school originally. But I like the biological anthropology route because it allows you to study health from a cultural perspective. So not just looking at the biology of disease, but also how does cultural practices like diet, activity levels, interactions with other people, how does that influence your health as well?
Why don't we talk about the study that was recently seen in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine?
Right. So this was a study that actually uses my master's paper, and I was looking at the relationship between sleep, both duration and quality, and cognitive decline in a population of elderly. So this is a pretty unique study, actually, because it's based on the study of global aging and adult health, which is funded by the World Health Organization and the National Institute of Aging. Mm. And so it's a pretty amazing data set. So we have data from people aged 50 and older in 6 middle-income countries. So most of the aging research that's been done is on Western populations, so more industrial countries like Europe or the United States. So not a lot of known about what aging looks like in other countries.
Yeah.
So these 6 countries are China and Mexico, Russia, India, Ghana, and South Africa. And we're expanding it too. So this was just the first wave of data. And it's pretty amazing data set with different variables on all different aspects of aging. And I was really interested in looking at there was a relationship between cognition as age in different age groups and these sleep variables.
Wow. Well, what did you find?
So what we looked specifically was 2 different measures of sleep. So sleep duration, where they just reported how many hours a night they slept, and also sleep quality. So they rated on a scale from 1 to 5 how they felt that they were sleeping. And then we used a battery of cognitive tests. So we had 5 different tests, immediate and delayed recall, and then a backward and forward digit span, and then a verbal fluency test. So we created a composite score of these 5 tests for each person. And then we ran some analyses to see if there was a relationship between these 2 different variables and cognition. And we found that, in fact, there was. And it was pretty significant. And we've seen the same patterns in every country. And so basically what we were seeing was that sleep really does matter. And it's kind of what you would expect to see where sleep quality, the higher the people were saying that they were sleeping, the rating their sleep quality, the better they were doing on these cognitive tests. But I think the most significant and the most the result that stood out the most was that this intermediate sleep range, which you've probably heard in different studies, this kind of sweet spot for sleep, so the 6 to 9 hours, really seemed to be the best. And that's where people were doing significantly better on all the cognitive tests, was from sleeping 6 to 9 hours and sleeping less than 6 hours or sleeping more than 9 hours. There really was a significant decline in their cognitive performance.
So you're saying 6, not 69,
6 to 9. 6 to 9 hours a night.
Right. Yes. How did you get this data?
One of the amazing things about this data set is we have a lot of statistical power in running these tests because we have thousands and thousands of participants. And I didn't personally collect the data, which in a way is good because from these different countries, I obviously don't speak all the languages or understand the cultures necessarily in a way that someone on the ground who grew up there would. So this is World Health Organization. I mean, they've been working on this project for a couple of years, and I was lucky enough to be included in the analyses. We're basically able to design these different studies. But the people who collected are on the ground. They're trained by the World Health Organization, and they administer these tests in the native language, and they are also part of this culture, so they understand the different social factors involved and how to explain different things in a way that's much better than, you know, me or other scientists outside of the culture might not be able to get across.
And over what length of time were these subjects asked about their sleep patterns and then their cognition tested?
So that's one of the things about this study is this is only a cross-sectional study, meaning this is just one time. So it's just kind of a snapshot of what's going on. So there's a one-time measurement. We only asked about 2 nights of sleep, which is a limitation to the study. So we created an average based on the 2 previous nights of sleep at the time of the interview and also how they rated their sleep quality the 2 previous nights before the interview. But we are in the process of collecting a second and then also a third wave of data with these same participants. So we'll be able to have a longitudinal study looking at how these patterns change over time, and which will help to establish, you know, what's causing what, if there's maybe some illnesses that we're not seeing that are going to become apparent over time that might affect both cognition and sleep. So to give us a better idea of what exactly is going on and how these are really related.
Yeah. What kind of information was gleaned in the data in terms of rating country to country? Who's getting the best rest in these six countries?
Right. So there was some interesting patterns that came out, and we saw that both of the African countries, so South Africa and Ghana, were reporting the longest sleep durations compared to the others, both men and women. And then we also found that those two countries, along with Mexico, had the highest sleep quality ratings, again, in both men and women. So this seemed to suggest to us that maybe there's some socioeconomic factors going into this. So those countries tend to be a little less developed, perhaps, you know, more people living in rural areas. So we are hypothesizing that perhaps these differences might structure their sleep patterns. So living in a rural area as opposed to an urban area might create a different sleep environment. So if you're living in an urban area, you're more exposed to light pollution, more stressors, you know, light, noise, which might affect your sleep detrimentally. So living in a more rural area, that might be better for improving your sleep quality and getting more sleep.
Mm. And who's sleeping the worst out there?
It kind of varied by country, but we did find that in general women were reporting lower sleep qualities in every country. So in general, they were reporting longer sleep durations but poor sleep quality in every country compared to the men. So that was a very interesting finding, and it was pretty convincing, compelling evidence that we were seeing this in every country, this significant sex difference. So it seems that women are struggling with their sleep as they get older. There's potentially different reasons for this. It's been proposed, this finding has come up in other studies as well. So it's been hypothesized that maybe this is due to postmenopausal changes, mm-hmm. so physiological hormonal changes that might disrupt sleep, or due to some feelings of social isolation or losing a spouse, or even things like bladder instability that happen as you get older could really disrupt your sleep.
Yeah, that does. All of those things seem possible,
yeah.
probable. Now, what do you think when it really comes down to it? Do you think that there's still a little bit of a mystery shrouded around the value of sleep? People use, it's kind of like the end all when you ask, oh, why do you look so great today? Well, I got a good night's sleep. What's in there? Is it just that downtime for the body?
Right. Well, there's actually, I think this is really getting a lot more attention now. People really are starting to realize the importance of sleep. And as a society, you know, Americans, we really value our productivity and often sacrifice, I feel, our sleep and our leisure time in order to be more productive. So now I'm hoping that things are kind of going the other way. We're really realizing that actually this is important, and it really could contribute to our productivity from what this study and other studies are indicating, that there's other more in-depth studies looking at changes in the brain and looking at how sleep improves memory consolidation and might also change the way your brain is looking and how it functions over time, especially as you age. So there really is a lot more exciting research coming out that hopefully will shed more light on this.
So what do you think will come out of this, the data and the research?
We're hoping to do some more follow-ups, again, with that longitudinal data, but we're really just excited to get some attention on this. I mean, this is, again, it's a popular research subject right now, and this is kind of a unique data set because it is using so many different unique cultures and countries with different economics and environments and so different factors, but we're still seeing these same patterns. So hopefully this will inspire other research groups to go out and test these hypotheses in different cultures and different countries and see if this holds up and see if we can maybe find some more patterns that could help inform medical intervention design to help with cognition and dementia. So now next month I'm heading to Ecuador.
Well, bon voyage to you, and
you.
I hope you continue your work, and thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.